Chapter 13, A Narrow Escape. Meanwhile, Marie, too anxious to wait upstairs, was watching for her brothers and Leonore in the salon, which looked out upon the road. There were but two or three people in it, while it was still so early, and they smoked their cigars and chatted for some time without seeming to notice her. But Marie could not help fancying that one of them, a dark, ill-favored-looking man, was watching her without appearing to do so, and with no kindly intent. She started when at length the man turned round and addressed her with an affectation of the deepest respect. "Mademoiselle is anxious for her brother, n'est-ce de pas?" "Mademoiselle need not fear. Le jeune gentilhomme will soon find his way home with the other demoiselle." Marie looked at the man with as much calm surprise as she could assume, and said in as rustic a tone as possible, "What did you say, monsieur? My brother has gone after no gentilhomme nor demoiselle. It is only Leonore whom he seeks, because we have still some way to walk tomorrow, and she ought to come and go to sleep." "Why was not Mademoiselle at the mass this morning?" suddenly questioned her tormentor, while the other men listened for the answer. "Oh, the mass," said Marie, with a slight shrug of her shoulders. "One can easily get absolution, and it is not every day poor peasants can spend in the woods." But she flushed up all over her face as she said it, and she had never been equivocated before. Evidently the man was not satisfied, though he said no more to her, but he spoke once or twice to his companions in a low tone, and Marie was sure that she caught the dreaded word heretic. She was very much alarmed and longed more than ever for her brother's return. Evidently, these people were bigoted Roman Catholics, and their suspicions were aroused. If they should inform, she felt as if she could not bear to remain any longer in the same room, and as the rain had now ceased, she went out a few steps into the road. Yes, they were in sight, all three. Henry and Gloom were talking earnestly to each other, and Leonore walked a little behind. Marie ran to meet them. But in her already alarmed state, she was quick to catch the expressions of their faces, and stopping short, she exclaimed, "Oh, Henry, you have heard bad news." "Hush, Marie," answered her brother anxiously. "Don't you see the street is full of idlers, and this is a Romanist place?" "Oh, I will not show. Only tell me," said Marie imploringly. "It will be worse when we get indoors." "Leonore has been to St. Croix," began Henry in a faltering tone. There was no need to say more. "And it is Father Gabriel?" ended Marie under her breath. Henry did not answer. He was struggling for composure. Gloom came up and took Marie's arm. "Yes, it was Father Gabriel. He died as he lived, a hero." There was even a ring of exultation in the boy's tone. "Oh, Gloom, was it very bad?" asked Marie, clinging to her brother for support. "Not very bad. He was shot down on the altar steps." They told her all that they had heard in a few brief sentences, and then composed their faces as well as possible to enter the auberg, and answered the rough jokes of the men. They went upstairs at once, for all three were dripping wet, but Marie detained Henry for a moment after Gloom and drew him into her room, and while she told him her fears about the men. He took the news even more seriously than she expected. "We are among a dangerous set," he said gravely, "and these men would think it a good deed to inform against us." "I am almost sure," said Marie, who was very pale, "that I heard one of them say, 'We will just see if the mayor can find out what they are tomorrow.'" Henry stood in thought for a few moments and then answered, "Well, Marie, there is no help for it. I am very sorry to give you extra fatigue, but we must leave the place secretly before the people are up. It would never do to run the risk of remaining here." "Oh, Henry, I am ready, but Leonore, she has walked all day." "And will walk all night, too, if it is necessary," said Leonore, quickly turning around. "Do you think I would be a drag upon you, even if it were not just as dangerous for me?" "I am very sorry, Leonore," said Henry, "but if you can walk, I think we must." "But certainly," answered Leonore, almost angrily, "I shall be ready at whatever time you choose." "Rest now, then," said the boy, turning to go. "Sleep well, Marie dear, and do not think about getting up. I will wake you when it is time." But it seemed to Marie, scarce half an hour afterwards, that she was wakened by a whispered call, and saw Henry in the dim summer night standing dressed by her bedside. "Oh, Henry, is it time already?" she inquired sleepily. "Why, it is quite dark." "It is past two," answered Henry, who had kept watch for the last hour, fearing that if he fell asleep again he might not wake till it was light. "It will soon be light, and these peasants rise so early. We must have a good start. Call Leonore, please, and come into our room when you are ready. I will help Louis." When the two girls joined him a little later, they found he had arranged everything for their escape. There was a horse block underneath their window, upon which he could easily let himself down, and then help the others to descend after him. They conscientiously calculated the amount of their bill, and left the sum upon the rough wooden table in the girls' room. Then Henry noiselessly unfastened the lattice, and with some difficulty managed to squeeze himself through, and dropped lightly on the block. "I don't know how the girls will do it," he whispered anxiously, as Gloom followed him and nearly pushed him off the block. Louis, frightened but silent, was next passed through the window, and Gloom took him from Henry. Then Leonore tried to come through, but found it a more difficult matter than she had thought, and suddenly a bit of the lattice work broke in her hands with a startling snap as she plumped down upon the horse block. There was an instant's breathless pause, and as they fancied, a sound within the house. They stood horror-struck, not attempting to run away. Indeed, Marie had not yet left the room. However, nothing stirred afterwards, and Henry, growing bolder, whispered, "Now, Marie, there is no time to lose." Leonore moved aside, and Marie, climbing upon the narrow sill, sprung lightly down without a sound. With one consent, they set off, running down the village street, and did not stop till they had left it quite behind and were some way out upon the lonely road. "I don't think they are after us," panted Leonore as they paused for a moment to take breath. "No, Gloom, I looked round as we turned a corner of the road. We were a long way off then, and there was nothing stirring." Suddenly, Henry gave a cry of alarm. "My testament! I have left it behind." "No, here it is," gasped Marie, who held it in her hand. "I saw it on your bed just as we were going away and took it up. You did not leave the pocketbook, did you? I could not see it anywhere." "No, I have that safe," said Henry with a sigh of relief, and they walked on more quietly in the gray light before the dawn. It was a long, weary day, and owing to their secret flight, they had not been able to take any provisions with them. The sun came up with power, and burned fiercely upon the shadeless road, which they dared not leave as it was so important that they should quickly reach Montauban. About 10 o'clock, when they already felt as the day should have passed, they came to a running stream and lingered some time by its side, trying vainly to satisfy both hunger and thirst with its refreshing water. Soon after this, Louis stumbled and fell, and Henry took him up in his arms. So they went on along that endless, glaring, dusty road. They tried to sing, but their voices soon died away, and they trudged on silently, and with the dogged tread of intense weariness. Marie felt as if they were walking on and on and on in some hideous dream, and when she opened her lips to speak and break the spell, the words refused to come. Still onward, still the same dusty road, still no sign of habitation. Marie noticed in a dull, emotionless way that Leonore's breath came in deep gasps and her lips were blue and parched. No one spoke of resting. There seemed to be no idea left in any of their minds but to walk on until they dropped or reached Montauban. That was the one word that Marie could remember. Montalban, Montalban, Montalban. Her very heart seemed to keep time to the word with dull, slow beats. At length the road grew wider. Houses were seen at some distance on either side and in front. Could it be, Marie asked herself in a curious, vague wonder, the town they meant to reach? Still none of them spoke, though all lifted up their heads, and the flush grew deeper on Leonore's cheek. They had not entered the town when Henry stumbled, and Louis broke the silence by entreating to be set down. He was rested now. Henry set him down without a word, only keeping hold of his hand. Gloom did not seem to notice it. He walked with his head bent down and his eyes almost shut. But Marie saw, still in the same dull way, that if it were not for Henry's hand, Louis would have fallen every moment. As they came into the first street of the town, they saw at a little distance a baker's shop. Leonore raised her hand and pointed to it with hungry eyes. With one accord, they all pressed on toward it, not hastily, for that was beyond them. Just as they reached its threshold, Louis fell down again, and this time he did not rise. He was in a dead faint. Marie knelt down by his side with a cry which brought the mistress out of the shop, a stout, motherly Frenchwoman, running to see what was the matter. "Ah, the poor child," was her exclamation as she saw Louis. "Give him to me. You cannot lift him, you poor little one. Water, that is the thing. Come in, all of you." And pushing Marie gently aside, she took Louis up in her kind, strong arms and carried him into a cool back parlor where she and her equally stout, kind husband, who somehow appeared on the scene, did their utmost to restore him to consciousness. It was not long before he opened his eyes and smiled feebly at Marie, who stood over him. "Bless his heart! He will be all right in a moment," exclaimed the good-natured woman. "What have you been doing to the poor little thing? He is fitter to be in bed than trailing the streets on such a day." Then, looking up, her eye fell on Leonore, who had sunk utterly exhausted into a chair, and she continued, "Comment, you all look half-dead, and strangers, what is it all about? Louis, mon ami, fetch out some wine, or we shall have five children in a dead faint instead of one." Louis, the husband, good-humouredly brought some wine, and made them all drink it, though it was doubtful if the sour stuff was the best thing for them. The good-natured woman poured out a string of ejaculations and questions, and as she perceived from their answers that there was something mysterious about the affair, and she went off into a series of nods and winks to her husband, which would have amused Marie if all her senses had not been taken up with the effort to keep from fainting. She pressed food upon them, and though they could scarcely touch it at first, the healthy craving soon returned, and after making a hearty meal, the four elder ones felt more like themselves. Louis lay silent on the sofa, scarcely eating anything, but smiling with a quiet content whenever anyone spoke to him. After their meal, Marie drew out the little purse, which Henry kept replenished from his pocketbook, and with many thanks would fain have paid for their meal and departed, but the good woman was quite indignant. "Do you think I am going to take money from a parcel of half-starved children like you?" she exclaimed with a vehemence which made the boys smile and Leonore flush angrily. "And do you mean to kill the child that you talk of dragging him one step further today? Teens, listen to me." She went and peered into the shop, beckoned out her husband, who had retired thither during their meal, and after his entrance shut the door of communication with an air of great mystery. "What is it, then, petite femme?" asked the great good-natured fellow with an amused smile. His wife made a funny little gesture of secrecy and spoke in an undertone to her guests. "Come," she said, "I know all about you. You need not be afraid of telling me. You are of the Reformed, is it not so?" Henry and Marie looked at one another and scarcely knew what to answer. "Come, come," she repeated. "Now one sees it. You are noble also. But it is quite safe to confide in Louis and me. See, I will trust you first. and she drew out of an inner pocket a small French testament and held it out. Now, mademoiselle, will believe me when I say we are also of the Reformed. You are very good, said Marie with a grateful impulse. Henry, let me tell her. It is true, madame, we are of the Reformed, and we are noble. And the dragoons came upon us by night, and only we children are left of our house, and we fly the country. I knew it, cried the good woman, clasping her hands in triumph. Mademoiselle shall not regret having trusted us, but she must trust us further. See, the house is large. Mademoiselle must have seen worse on her journey. She must permit herself to remain here a day or two until the poor little monsieur is rested. Shall it not be so, Louis? If these ladies will condescend to remain under my roof, and they shall be welcome, and the young gentleman also, answered the man, with a simple dignity which well became him, and a bow which included both Leonore and Marie. We are very much beholden to you, answered Leonore, with a slight hauteur which was perhaps unconscious, and which was lost in Marie's hesitating entreaty that Louis might be put to bed somewhere at once, as they had been talking ever since 2 o'clock that morning. Comment! You don't say so, exclaimed their horrified hostess. Why, the only wonder is that there is any life at all left in him. Louis, get you back to the shop. You are not wanted now. The young monsieurs will doubtless amuse themselves here while mademoiselle and I will take away this poor little one. What will you do, Leonore? Asked Marie, as seeing a slight frown on that young lady's face. Me? Oh, I shall rest here, answered Leonore carelessly, lying back on the rude sofa from which the good woman had just lifted Louis. Gloom cannot find you something to fan me with. Gloom obediently came to her side and sat fanning her more and more lazily, till at length the paper dropped from his hands, and Leonore looked up, discovered that both her companions were asleep. She held up her finger with an amused smile as the baker's wife re-entered with Marie, but the good woman was not so easily repressed, and insisted on every one of them retiring likewise to bed, and staying there till tomorrow morning. In fact, it was already late in the afternoon, and they were only too glad to put off all explanations and arrangements till the next day.